Hi, welcome to Trainwrecks for Jesus. I'm Mark Townsend.
And I'm Maggie Whitehouse. We're both ordained ministers who've left our established churches to become independents.
I'm a little bit pagan,
And I'm a little bit Jewish.
but we are both self-confessed train wrecks, and we're passionate followers of Jesus too.
So follow us as we discuss how falling flat on your face can also be falling upward. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Trainwrecks for Jesus. And this is the time where we start putting unexpected questions to each other, which usually means the other one goes, "What?" But we'll give it a
What?
go.
Yeah.
So it is the season of Lent. And so my question to you today, hello, Mark.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Maggie, and lovely to be here.
Is did you were you a child that followed Lent? Did you give up chocolate? Does Lent mean anything to you, or is it just another of those strange things in the Christian calendar which was put in there for some reason that we don't even know about?
There's a whole host of things to say, because I'm not, and I'm very unqualified to talk about Lent. First of all, because as a kid it meant nothing to me because I wasn't a Christian child. I mean, I went to C of E school, but I can't remember anything at all about Lent and stuff. I was much more interested in Greek mythology, to be honest, when I was sort of bored at prep school and all that. But we had and I think about 16 or 17 when I came into Christianity through a Pentecostal route, who don't really bother with Lent either. So, the liturgical traditions, I mean, it's later, it's getting towards my 20s when I came into it. And there's a few things, a couple of things that, I mean, I used to be a little bit provocative around Lent as a priest, because I used to think that it was quite a sanctimonious time for some people. And the kind of devil's advocate in me wanted to challenge people a little bit, partly because one of the readings that is often used at Lent is about not disfiguring your faces and not being seen to be holy. And then you go and put a bloody cross on your face and walk around town pretending to be holy. It's like,
You
it's
mean
the,
Ash Wednesday, the cross? Yes.
yeah, to begin Lent. And I've seen, even this year, I've seen people, looking very pious and putting their changing their profile shots to the bloody great cross. That isn't the purpose for the ash. It's not to show everybody how holy you're being. It's about sackcloth and ashes. It's getting back to the raw talk about the, so it used to piss me off a little bit, to be honest. And
Yes.
also
Jesus said, go into your room and close the door when you
privately,
pray. Do not post it on Facebook. He should have
exactly.
added that,
Now,
shouldn't he?
we all fall into this. But it reminds me of one of my vicars in the past, who used to say, "I always think it's good that your congregation should see you pray before every service." So he would kneel up at the altar, and that isn't the reason for praying before a service, not so your congregation can see you be holy. It's that's actually creating a division. That's not, so all of this stuff, all this showy stuff, and I know I might be missing the point, because I'm sure it's quite a, it is a humbling thing to be told, to dust you shall return, blah, blah, blah. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, I think the whole business of, I used to say, rather than give something up for Lent, why don't you this year give up trying to give something up for Lent? Because the whole deal about giving up this, that, or the other, and making yourself feel a little bit better, again, is missing the entire point. It's not about sort of earning your salvation. It's the complete reverse. It's about getting, recognizing that you are dust, recognizing that you are, I hate to say this, but you're kind of, I don't want to, I'm trying to avoid swearing at the
Oh
moment.
no, don't avoid swearing. Go for it.
I've told you once before, I loved Richard Rohr when I was on a retreat with him, and he got us all to chant, "You are gods, gods who shit." And the whole point of that is this strange oxymoron that we are both human and divine. We are made in the image of God, but we're also full of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what sort of the spiritual sort of climbing the ladder of perfection kind of spirituality of, even if it is just for 40 days, it sets you on the path of gaining, trying to gain salvation by pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps. And I just think that's the wrong message. I don't know what the right message is for Lent. And I'm when you asked me earlier on, you said about the 40 days. If anything, shouldn't it be a kind of profound reflection on what that would have meant to Jesus, and the things that he it was tempted by, which were pride, power, and possessions. Isn't it more about actually plunging yourself into the grittiness of it rather than this sanctimonious kind of ashes on your forehead and wandering around town? Because I mean, I hate to go on about that, but it really irritates me. On the one hand, it looks like a bunch of cult members. On the other hand, it's like a bunch of pious, bloody Christians, who think they're better than everybody else. And that surely is not the purpose for Lent. So,
Well, that's
what do you have?
heartfelt.
What do you have to say about it, Maggie?
I'm trying to find a PowerPoint I used at the weekend, and of course I can't do it because you mentioned the temptations in the desert, but I'll still see if I can sort it out. Well, I was raised in a Christian household, and one gave up chocolate for Lent. It was imposed. And I didn't become a rebel until later, so I probably did give up chocolate for Lent. I can't remember. I used to sneak out sometimes and go up to the shops and buy chocolate. And there was a hole in the fence I could get through. So I was a wicked, evil little girl. I mean, that's not wicked, but it felt like it.
And what tradition of Christianity was that? See,
Oh,
if
Church of
it,
England,
so
just
what
your
was the
average.
right?
Just your average bog standard Church of England, to be honest. But so, and I always found it was boring, and because it always was tied up for me with, even though my birthday isn't till the end of April, Lent always felt similar to this thing of having to be sorry for things that you've done or having to thank people for things that you don't want. And my birthday was always marked by the having, and Christmas was too, having to write the thank you letters. Did you have to write thank you
Oh,
letters? Yeah. I
definitely,
hated writing thank you letters. And so often you had to thank things for people you didn't, things you didn't want. So Lent felt a bit like that to me. And I would just sort of hope to God for, oh, and it also had Mothering Sunday in it, which in our house, I didn't spot it until later, but it's also Refreshment Sunday, so you can have what you like on Mothering Sunday. And my mother would always say it had to be Mothering Sunday. So there was always the real challenge of finding a card that said Happy Mothering Sunday, not Happy Mother's Day. So it wasn't a time that I relished at all. In later years, now I am a heretic Christian. I do try and give something up, but I try and do something that's going to be good for me. Not just giving up chocolate, which probably is good for me, but it just meant I'd eat more cake. But I try and give up complaining for Lent. Because I think it's just a good thing to sometimes to do something that's going to improve your own psyche, if you see what I mean. And this year I actually had an interesting challenge, which I posted about today because it's had the most beautiful answer. When I went to the Southwest Comedians Christmas party on the 21st of December, and it was just lovely. I really had a wonderful time. I wasn't expecting to, because previously I've always felt a bit of a, the black sheep in the corner. I don't know what the correct phrase is. There's something in the corner, or the elephant in the room. Probably the elephant in the room. Anyway, I had a lovely time. Probably had a lovely time because I had a couple of drinks beforehand with some mates, and I bought a bottle of wine. So I was probably a little bit plastered. So I had a great time, and I left behind a scarf, and it was a really beautiful silk velvet embroidered scarf. So I phoned him up the next day and said, I've left it behind. Can you hold it for me in your lost property? But I won't be able to get back to Exeter for at least a month. So is that okay? And they said, yes, it was fine. I didn't take a name because, yes, it was fine. And then the next time I was going to be in Exeter, which was at the beginning of February, I phoned them up to say, I'm going to come in and collect it. Mm. And they said, oh. And they'd had a change of management and they'd taken it to a charity shop 3 weeks earlier.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And I was really quite miffed. But yeah. This start of Lent.
Right.
And so I wanted to, they said, write to the parent company. I mean, they were very kind about it and sorry, and aghast and all that. But I was in my no complaint time. So how did I point this out without complaining? So it was actually quite a task to write to them and say, look, I take full responsibility that I had a fair amount to drink and I was careless. And so it's completely my fault that I left it behind, and I wouldn't have blamed you if you'd sent it to lost property, sent it to a charity shop immediately, or somebody else had taken it. It was my responsibility. However, I did phone you up, and you did say, and again, I know you've had a change of management, so obviously the policy changed, and that's absolutely fair enough, and I didn't leave my phone number, but I wanted to let you know that it's a shame. And please don't offer me a meal or anything like that, because I'm not feeling very good about you at the moment and I don't want to come and have a free meal. So it was entirely polite and I didn't ask them for anything. And then I got a phone call from them. I don't know how they found my phone number. I didn't give it to them, but they found my phone number and phoned up and said they were really, really sorry. I'd sent a picture of the scarf as well to show them what it was like, why it was valued. And they phoned me up and said, we found it on the internet. We found a version and we'd like to buy it for you. And it was just so lovely. And I bet they wouldn't have felt like that. If I had complained and been bitter about it, they probably would have come back and said, we'll offer you a free meal, which they knew I wouldn't have taken up. So, but the very fact that I didn't complain brought this wonderful benefit.
That's lovely.
Yeah. It is lovely. So I mean, that's my Lent story for the moment. But I think the origin of it is, apart from the priestcraft attitude, is that at this time of the year, we didn't have much to eat because we'd run out of everything we'd eaten in the winter. And the only things we really had to eat were fresh shoots or very old mangel wurzels or something. So it was a time when people kind of did starve and saved up for a feast at Easter, I suppose. But also this 40 days thing, 40 is a really sacred number in Judaism. Moses and his people were 40 years in the desert. Well, they weren't. I mean, they can't have been. I looked it up, and apparently to take 40 years getting across to Israel, to the promised land, meant they went 30 yards a day. That would be it. And there's that wonderful old joke that it took them 40 years because Moses wouldn't let Miriam ask for directions. But it symbolically it means you're passing through a whole generation. So and it there's 40 Sephirot on the extended tree of life. So it means a complete cleansing of the psyche, right. I suppose. So in that respect, it's sort of important, I think. But it's been presented to us all wrong, hasn't it? And you're so right. I hadn't thought about that ash mark on the forehead and showing your face on Facebook. Yeah.
It's just the reaction that, and I was a bit cruel then when I was talking before. I'm a bit tired and waspy today. It's all very, the intentions are good, but it's like, you know, it's like the kind of, another situation that I had that was similar was at theological college, and we had Robert Runcie come. He was ex Archbishop of Canterbury, and you know everyone was fannying around trying to make sure everything was perfect in the little church, and the principal was, you know, dancing on tiptoes. I mean, I suppose I would be if I was in this position, because you want to put on a show, you want to sort of suck up, don't you? You want to suck up to the big boss. And it was hilarious because there was this big, there was obviously some sort of dignitaries or important, you know, VIPs, and it was very much very clear that all of the students had to take the very back seats, And then the sort of then the better the higher up the scale parishioners, and then the sort of the big wigs at the top and at the very front. And the very reading on that day, I don't know how anyone didn't notice it. I think only I noticed it was, those who shall be exalted will be humbled. And it was like those who take the best seats in the synagogues. It's like it was complete role reversal again. And it just made me smile of how, and I can only think of myself and the ways I get things wrong all the time, but it is completely wrong. It's the complete reversal. It's like seeing Donald Trump as the Messiah. There couldn't be anybody more anti-Christ than Donald Trump to be seen as the Christ, It's like, and yet people hold it's such a crazy. And I was reading a wonderful history book recently by Andrew Marr. I
I
got to
saw the
the
TV program that he
oh what fantastic
excellent.
I got to the bit about, we all know the story of Constantine, but I mean it couldn't be worse. This sort of militaristic almost dictator putting on Christian clothes and turning, using the cross from that point on, not as a symbol of sacrifice and forgiveness, but as a symbol to fucking fight with. I mean, it's just utterly incredible. Put it on shields and swords, and to dress up the Knights Templar in the end with, and I'm talking way in the future, but the whole knight thing that, it's just madness. It
Yes,
is.
I'm
It's,
killing people in the name of God because God's
yeah.
on my side. Yeah,
Yeah.
it is.
But
And it still happens.
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, do. But it's just these kind of, I don't know. Another thing I think we've done is, we've created sort of Holy of Holy type temples,
Yeah.
which is completely not what the story of Jesus was about.
No.
It was about stepping down into dirt and soil and touching lepers and women and children and people who've been spat on and shat on and foreigners and pagans and not having this kind of priestocracy.
Yes.
And there we go, we've done it again. I had another tutor at my theological college who was a Eastern Rite Orthodox priest, and he brought this little holy cloth in that I don't know what it was, something that they'd made up somewhere back in the past, some sacred cloth. And he kind of freaked out when someone reached out to touch it, and nobody can touch it, only the priest. And it's like, I was part of an independent, Catholic church a few years ago, and they all wear these poncy white gloves to symbolize purity, the bishops. And then one of them had this little cloth that the person who'd bought her crozier, I don't suppose the woman even knew what a crozier was. She was wandering around with it. And that sounds really horrible, I'm sorry. But she had to hold this crozier through a white glove, through another piece of strange cloth, because this whole thing of purity, it's total fucking bullshit. It's all bullshit. It's all made up,
Explain
total
what a
bullshit.
crozier is, because lots of people might not know.
The shepherd's crook,
Yes.
which the original bishops used to wear, which symbolized being a pastor, turned into almost like this great big ornate symbol of power, really.
Yeah.
And the people I'm talking about bought them off the internet and wander around with them with their pointy hats
Yes.
and congregations of two people and fart around with all this total, upside down Christianity, which actually is not Christianity at all. Now
No.
I'm sounding really horrible now, but I'm
No,
sort of
I agree with every single word you said so far, so I'm as horrible as you are.
I'm letting off steam, but it's ridiculous. The whole point, I'm wrong. We all talk crap, but the whole point of this story that we love, which is about Jesus, is a human being stepping into a world of division and saying no more divisions
Yeah.
between anything, between man and man and women and children, man and God, God and men, everybody.
Yeah.
But we are all one.
Yeah. And he said so clearly, when you pray, Step into your closet and shut the door. He said,
Yeah.
don't wear long robes like the Pharisees do.
Hypocrites, yeah.
Yes, don't pray loudly in public. He and as you say, that parable about don't ask to be seated at the top table because you may be asked to go down, sit at the bottom so you can be asked up. I totally agree.
And
This
they're tough lessons. They're lessons that I have to say challenge me as much as I'm sort of horrified by how they don't seem to challenge others. They really challenge me, and they make me realize Christianity is the hardest thing to follow because, the beautiful, open, all-inclusive, liberal gospel is a tough gospel because it means we have to apply the rules to ourselves and to everybody else, but it doesn't mean there's a punishing God who beats you into hell, because that's from the other side. That's the meritocracy, the kind of climbing towards heaven, and we're all worthless sinners. Jesus comes, I think, to challenge all of that. And I do apologize for the swearing, but it really does get me down and reminds me of why I don't really belong very much anymore to any form of Christianity, though I still feel I am a Christian.
Yes, I was announced as a Christian at the gig I did on Friday night, and I sort of denied it. I said I'm a heretic Christian because I just thought I don't really want to be associated with any Christian who supports Donald Trump, thinks the robes are more important than anything else, or whatever. And I'm not trying to sound superior like that. It's bloody hard work following Jesus. It's really hard work. I do complain every night, and I confess everything I've got wrong. I do allow myself to say, okay, that was okay. You did okay there. I don't beat myself shitless, as it were. But no, I agree with you. G.K. Chesterton, we've quoted him before. It's not that Christianity has been tried and found wanting. It's been found hard and not tried at all. Yeah.
So,
That'll do.
wait till we get to Good Friday. Oh gosh. I feel a little bit ashamed now, actually. I must confess, because I probably let off a bit too much, and I don't mean the way I speak. I get a bit excited, and it's quite fun, and then I forget that there are probably going to be people listening to me. But I do get ever so frustrated, partly because of my own sort of history with the church and the pain that I've been through, and but also what I see all the, almost constantly, in the news, and Trump, okay, but also other stuff that you just, I don't know. If only we could get a glimpse of the human, human divine Jesus, who is human and divine because we are all human and divine. We are all in our sense, in the deepest sense, little. We have the ability to be little Christ.
Little Christs and little crap masters, yes. Can I
Crap
ask you,
masters.
when you do a funeral, do you have your name on the brochure?
Usually, I mean, I don't have anything to do with what they put on, but I notice that my name normally is, yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting because I've always said don't put my name on the brochure because it's not about me. But I actually had somebody quite recently pointing out that people might want to know who's taking the service. So that's perfectly fair enough. But I went to a family funeral recently, and God, they are hard to go to, aren't they? Because you want to heckle. there was this celebrant who just introduced herself and talked about herself for 5 minutes before she started the funeral.
Yeah.
I just thought, what?
I think it's part of the celebrant training as opposed to the clergy training. Clergy person will never begin by, "Hello, I'm Father so-and-so," or I'm Reverend this or that. They'll just go straight into the Lord be with you, or some words of, and that's why perhaps written on the front it might help, because there's no need. I've never introduced myself. I'm not there to have any. It's
Not about
completely,
you.
it's about the family and about the deceased. But I think it's in the training because I've heard just about every celebrant do that, and a little sometimes a little bit about what what the I'm I'm so and so, I'm a celebrant, and this is my qualification, sort of thing. And if that's the training, that's fine.
That's
So
useful to know.
it's a sort of I suppose a giving a little bit of a stamp of the authority, or to say, this is why I'm entitled to do this. But I just never found it. Partly, well, like I said, the clergy are never sort of taught to do that.
No, fair enough. And I usually do a funeral in a black cassock, or at least with a dog collar on, so they know I'm a vicar, so that's okay, which of course a celebrant can't or doesn't do. No, that's really useful to know. Thank you. I wanted to talk that one over with you because the lady pointed out people should know who you are.
I go halfway house with the robes, with the clothing. If people ask me to put the full cassock and whatever on, I will do it. Generally speaking, I wear a suit and a jacket, but I wear a stole on top of that.
Yes, me
So
too. Usually,
yeah,
yes. I
so
will
so
wear
it's
the stole. I will always
just you
wear
know I don't have any I have a tree of life on it rather than a cross, so it doesn't look distinctively Christian, but it's ministerial, so it kind of gives people the knowledge that you are some sort of ceremonial person.
We all have our own strange little oddities too, and I never say I never had the privilege to meet so and so, because that annoys me when other people do that. I just make it seem as if I did know them. You know, if you talk enough to the family, you can.
You
I
can get a
usually
good
get people
glimpse.
saying, "Oh, did you know so and so?" And afterwards, I'll say, "No, I didn't, but I learned so much about them. I felt I knew them." Okay, well,
Cool.
that was that.
Good.
I didn't think you were rude at all.
Oh,
I think you could have
I
been an awful lot ruder.
was. Oh dear.
And possibly next time you will be. Thank you ever so much, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.
Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.